Hi, my name is Phil Metzger, and in 1992, I moved to Moscow, Russia. From there, I lived in the beautiful Central European country of Hungary, where my family and I spent the next 20 years living, learning, and sharing about Jesus. Different foods, culture, and language, but underneath it all, we discovered the most amazing people. We learned that to share the gospel effectively, we had to adjust. We had to cross cultures. Now we're back in the U.S., and we're discovering that this country is a melting pot of culture. This show is committed to helping Christians connect to those who think, believe, and live differently than them. This is Crossing Cultures. Well, thanks for joining us again for this episode of Crossing Cultures, where we are looking at how we bridge gaps between our Christian faith and learning to respect and understand and connect to people who might think, believe, and live differently than we do. Jesus made such a huge leap from heaven to connect to each one of us, and certainly we're called to do the same, to connect to each other. This episode, I'm joined again always by my buddy Nick Roach.
What's up, brother?
What's up, my man? And this is going to be a fun one. Yeah. This might be a touchy one.
I'm excited. It will be touchy.
Okay.
But that's a part of all this. I mean, there's nothing about race or the gospel that doesn't hit home at some point.
Yeah, these issues create a visceral reaction.
Yeah.
And this one's going to create a visceral reaction. Mm-hmm. We've already talked about the idea of ethnocentrism and power and privilege.
Yeah.
But today we want to unpack white privilege. Mm-hmm. And those two words, it's just like you put those two words together, mm-hmm. and man, oh man, people get on it, right? Mm-hmm. So we're gonna be joined right now, and I want to welcome in April Diaz.
Yes.
I want you to introduce April because she has a big role in your life.
So. Yes. So love to introduce April Diaz. She's been a longtime friend, actually. Now I think we met 6-7 years ago. But what I love about April, she does a lot. I mean, she's author, speaker, you know, worked in church world for a long time. Podcaster, all these things, just a founder of Azer & Co., which is a business. I'll let her explain more. But what I respect so much about April is that she is not one of these leaders with great ideas, mm-hmm. only with great ideas, I should say. She's working herself as hard as she is the people that she's building up and launching out. You know, she's a long lifetime learner and really is not content with staying that same person. Mm-hmm. She's always growing. Important things to know about April for this discussion is mm-hmm. that she's a white lady from Middle America, but is now living in Southern California mm-hmm. as the minority in her house, married to Latin American husband. They adopted two babies from Ethiopia.
Nice.
They have raising another brown baby.
Okay.
And so I think that just this is a conversation that means a lot to her, not only work-wise, but personally.
Okay.
So
I love that.
April, thank you for being
April, here. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Is that good coffee?
My second and a half cup of the day. So yeah, it's necessary in distance learning world where we are living. So yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is an important conversation. I'm grateful to share any of my own story. Nothing's off limits. So let's go for it.
Awesome.
I love it. And okay. And so wait, I've got a question first. You're like a life coach, or you are not like, but you are a life coach.
I am a coach. Yes.
You're a life coach. And, how's Nick? Nick's a good student for you?
The best.
Yep.
Yes. He is remarkable. He's a remarkable coach. Actually. He's not, I have not just coached him, simply coached him. He is a coach and he is a fabulous coach. So
I am so
grateful to be in friendship with him and his family and, know that he is making great impact in this world. And that makes me really happy.
Yeah, good people, 100%. I agree. And thanks for doing this because, you know, we've been trying to bring people in who can add to the conversation, you know, just the two of us sitting here talking. Mm-hmm. We wanted to bring people in who we felt like could help us get a better understanding. So let's get right in.
Coach,
right?
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about like what you do in your work primarily and then just how that, I guess that plus your personal life, how that bubbles up into a passion for this topic for today.
Yeah. Well, I've been a leader my whole life. But as a woman growing up in a faith space, that wasn't always very well received or welcomed or encouraged. But I always have been. And so I've been, I led in churches for 17 plus years, pastoring there. And 2 years ago, not even 2 years ago, launched a company called Azer & Co., And we are just all about helping women become warriors and lead in all spaces. We're really committed to helping women become whole in their life and their leadership, and to just become the fullness of who they've been created to be. And so that looks like we do a lot of coaching, but we also do spiritual direction, and we've got transformational resources, and we're dreaming and building all kinds of things these days, especially during COVID, when I can't be out on the road and on stages and, you know, like in gatherings. So it's been really beautiful in the last 5 months, even in all of the hard, to imagine the fullness of what this company is supposed to be about, to help women reclaim this identity as an Azer, which is the name that we've been given since the beginning. So it's really good. And I think, like, it's always been important to me to be a voice for the marginalized. I was a middle school and a high school pastor for a whole lot of years. And again, I was a woman in leadership. And so I've always been on the margins. I've always been on the fringe, just in my own life. And then I married a Puerto Rican, and we have some Black babies, and, you know, have worked with women. And basically, I find every person that I spend a good bit of time with has been somebody who has found themselves on the margins, or has experienced oppression, or who has not been welcomed and given a place at the table. And so Azer & Co. is certainly a very significant expression of that. But this whole racial conversation is just, I mean, it's at the heart and the core of who I am, because it is entirely personal. It is my family. It is the man that I'm married to and the children that we are parenting. And it has come to really help me see the gospel in ways that I didn't growing up, because those were not conversations that we were having.
Right.
That's awesome. I think, thank you for sharing that too, because one of the things I know you spend a lot of time on is with Azer & Co. being focused on women coming to wholeness. That's really an invitation to men also to become that ally. It's not an exclusive, you know, endeavor. And so I think it's important, as these conversations, when we focus on a group, can feel like everybody else is cut out, but really, you know, hoping that, or I know you're going to help us understand how that's really an invitation to everybody else to really do it together. So
that's a really good point.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's get into the actual, you know, so white privilege, right? You say white privilege, we could say it, the three of us in here, but when people watch it, some people will turn off already. They'll be upset. It just creates this thing.
Right.
You know, obviously, you know, let's talk about it. We, the three of us collectively may not have all the wisdom of the ages, but we can certainly try to, like, why do you think this is such a, why does it get the reaction that it does?
Yeah.
That's April, we're going to you first.
Yeah. I mean, I think it gets the reaction that it does because it's been politicized. And a lot of Christians, Jesus people, aren't happy with those political conversations. So I would say, first and foremost, let's take a step back and let's try to remove that politicalization. And let's look at the heart of what it actually is about. And Nick and I talk about this as coaches, that whenever there is resistance or whenever there is defensiveness, that is an opportunity to actually create openness within you, because it is disrupting something within you that you have been comfortable with, that has been a status quo, that you have accepted as true. And so when those kind of whoosh walls go up, that is the opportunity. That is the invitation to go, maybe there is something in here for me to learn that I do not already know, that I do not already understand, that is not already true of who I am. And perhaps this can shape my character. So the first and foremost thing that I would say, and this was true in my own journey when I first started learning about white privilege, was I had all kinds of defenses and excuses, and those don't get you anywhere close to transformation. All of the, all that they do is back you up in the corner of the little world that you are living in, which, let's be honest, we all live in our small little world. it's how we survive in a lot of ways. But those resistances and those defensiveness are opportunities for us to explore something that will lead us towards transformation. So instead of discounting it and holding up all of those walls, maybe those walls can actually become mirrors.
That's good. So, Coach, then tell me, what about, I wanted to ask you, you know, from the first few times that you started hearing that term being thrown around, it's been at least a few years now, I know, from since I've heard it, but not until recently have I been really trying to explore what is the idea behind it? So I guess for you, what was the progression like from when you first started hearing it to now being able to understand what the idea is in a productive way? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the first offensiveness for me was that white privilege didn't apply to me because I didn't think that I was racist. And mm-hmm. so there was a dichotomy set instead of kind of some of that ambiguity that was in the middle. I also just looked at my life and didn't think that there had been much that had been handed to me, that I wasn't privileged in the ways of, like, I wasn't in the top 1% financially in the world. Like, I came from a hardworking, middle-class, white, middle America. And mm-hmm. so I didn't see the privilege that had been given to me because of the circumstances I lived in. Like, my parents had always worked hard. My grandparents had always worked hard. They had, you know, always contributed to society. There didn't seem like there was this privilege that was given to me. And so mm-hmm. I didn't see it. I didn't feel as much defensive as much as I just didn't see how that was possible. So I started digging in a bit. And a mm-hmm. lot of it was a result of the relationships that were around me that were inviting and challenging me to do some work. That just because you don't know something doesn't mean that it's not true. And so my friends and my husband were going, maybe there's something for you to explore that you don't already know. And so what I have been in the process of discovering over the last 10 to 15 years is how much systemically, how much in the policies and in the history and in the procedures and systems of our country have been toward the benefit of white people in this country. Mm-hmm. And in that generational effect, I mean, we talk about that as believers, right? We pray that, like, we pray for the blessings to be generation upon generation. And you would teach your children's children, and there are these blessings and then curses as well, right? So there are some blessings that white people have received just because of the color of their skin. And there have been curses that have been placed upon people of color because of the color of their skin. And it's been embedded into our systems and our policies and our structures. And so as a result of that, we've got to do some work. We've got to do some work to both understand where that has come from and what the impact of that has been personally, individually, but also communally. And I think that's a lot of that gospel work too, is like Jesus comes to save you, but that salvation and the work that Jesus has come to do is communally. It is for communities, it is for countries, it is for our world. It's the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. And so that's why it's important for us to get after this.
I was just thinking that as you were saying that, like, you know, I kind of reached a point, and I've been in a lot of different conferences now and talking on panels and doing these things too. And you get to this point where you're like, I feel like I'm always having to bring along the group of people that have always been pandered to. That it's constantly like we're having to do that. And so I'm kind of aware of that, mm-hmm. but also acknowledging when we're going to talk about this subject, there is a need for some of that, because that's the group that's going to be at the most defensive. So I want to unpack a little bit about what you said there, April. You said that you didn't see that for yourself. Do you think some of the defensiveness that comes up in for a lot of people revolves around the idea that, like, but I didn't create that? Like, okay, even if it does exist, I didn't do that. And again, I'm giving the pushback only because these are things that people are saying. Mm-hmm. How do we help people who are, you know, they're not wrong about that. They're not the reason that these things are the way they are, you know, and because they're feeling attacked. How would you address that?
Yeah, again, like in that attack word, I would just say, let's not focus on that. Like it's mm-hmm. not, this isn't about you. This is about us. And this is about, it's about those who have been harmed along the way. So first of all, like, can we just in a spirit of maturity and a spirit of like community and connection, can we just lay that part down? Cause it's not about that. And it's true that like, you may not have been the one who owned slaves or created the policy that created redlining in your community. You may not have been the one that called somebody a name. And yet, as a result of all of those things and so much more, you benefit from it. And so just as there is any sort of injustice in the world, the things that break the heart of God are intended to break our own hearts. We are mm-hmm. the ones that when there is a problem, we get to be a part of the solution then. Mm-hmm. And so the race deal is such an interesting conversation because there's so many other conversations where, like, these things are broken. Let's do something about these.
Exactly.
And I want to contribute to that. Even though I didn't cause the problem, I want to be a part of the solution because this doesn't work for me. This doesn't work for my family. This doesn't work for my community. But the race conversation, that's where it gets so messy and interesting to me, that why are Jesus people the first ones to go, that is not okay that my brother experiences this with the police. It is not okay that my sister has been pulled over for this, or who has fear in any way, shape, or form. Why is that the thing that is causing us to go, that's not my problem because I didn't create it. Intellectually incoherent and don't go together.
That's good.
That's hard. I've never heard it put that way, but that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard, man.
So I look at things like, I look at the politicization of these things. Mm-hmm. I can't even say the word right, but we all know what I mean. Yeah. I'm thinking of, I think you said it right. We'll just re-edit and take your version again. I'm thinking of like a misguided idea of history where, you know, we double down on this idea of, no, like we're great. We always have been, and we're amazing. And it's like, and for those that believe that, well, that's fine, but it doesn't coexist with the gospel.
Nope.
Yeah.
When the whole message of the gospel is that all have sinned, it's mind-boggling how we want to double down on, but I'm not that.
But not me. Yeah.
You know, I'm not that. And so, you know, both of us have, and all three of us, we're all talking to a lot of Christians these days, and here's my naivety. It surprised me how people are unable to push beyond either the politics or this misguided idea of, but I'm an American kind of a thing, to have an honest conversation. I love the way that you said it. I really appreciate it.
So let me, April, then. So last night, I don't know if I mentioned already, I was having the idea as we were prepping for the show. I was like, you know what? I'm going to poll a couple of my like white Christian friends and just get their gut reactions to when they hear white privilege. And after probably a good 6 or 8 responses, it was pretty much consensus that, you know, the reflex is kind of like the wall goes up. It's this accusatory and almost like this. One guy was talking about how it feels like every accomplishment that he's ever gotten feels diminished because of that, like throwing that out there. And so it's attached to all these negative things. And so I'm thinking, like you said, I love how you said, in the spirit of connection. Mm-hmm. When we're trying to have these discussions, you know, in the spirit of connection, is this even a useful term? Or, you know, how do we get to the point where we can talk about the idea without this being some kind of red flag that throws the entire interaction off? Or, you know, I guess, what are your thoughts around? Mm-hmm. It's so loaded for so many people still. Even the people that understand the concept still are just kind of like, it's a sour taste. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, we talk about this in coaching, is that coaching lives in language, and language is really important. The narrative that you tell, the narrative that you have about yourself, about each other, about the world, that narrative is important. So the language that we use carries weight and is meaningful. So in some ways I could argue both sides of the same argument. I think that the reason why using the term white privilege is important is because it is language that does communicate what it actually is. And it's a term, it's a definition that we all can understand if we choose to, if we desire to actually explore it. At the same time, because it has turned off so many white people, particularly, from actually doing the work, maybe we do need another term that will be more invitational. So, you know, like, I think leadership is a lot about talking in terms that people care about, and using that language in order to see transformation and change take place in a person's life and in the way that they live it. So I don't know, maybe we don't lead with, you've got a whole lot of white privilege that you don't know about and you're not exploring anywhere.
Exactly,
maybe that doesn't invite people in, but but the ideas that undergird it, that support it, that really flesh out what this means, maybe that's the terms and that's the language that we can use.
I'm thinking of like two ideas in this. One is, people get so, like, I think when you hear the term, you, and for so much when it comes to the issue of race, you get a macro, people get a macro approach. In other words, like, you know, how is this going to play out on the big scale of life? When, like, for us and the specific focus of this time that we're trying to have, we're focused on relationships, actual relationships, not the made up ones of like, you know, well, how is this going to affect the people in Baltimore?
Yeah.
We're talking about my friends, your friends. Mm. How do you know, one of my favorite books is called Diversity Competence. The subtitle is Cultures Don't Meet, People Do. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to talk about this on a micro level. So, you know, we want to remove the idea of like white privilege as a macro idea, but really about how do I create deeper relationship with a friend who is a person of color who may assume, because I think relationships already start on a negative in the sense of like, you're assuming, you know, I'll use you and me. You might assume I have some views, whether I do or not. I might assume you have views, whether you do or not. These conversations open those things up if we can do it in a spirit of humility. And I was thinking about terminology. My second idea is that like, we've seen some famous people, we've seen Christians try to create new terminology around this and really fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because in many ways, the terminology it is what it is. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. Whether you like it or not, it's very clear. And I was thinking about, you know, we do have to, and I like what you said, April. There's even been, you know, we've thrown around this, or not we, but it's been thrown around this idea of defund the police, right? We keep hearing that all the time. And that creates a really, another visceral reaction to many people. Black, brown, white, everybody has a like yes or no. And you hear them kind of recreating that terminology now, redistribution of funds or so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with white privilege, it's such a clear idea that it does work, but it requires me, and it requires me as a white person to lower my defenses. I think it requires you as a black person to lower your offenses.
Right? Exactly.
That's and right. Then we can have that conversation.
That's true. Because actually every instance of the responses I got was in how they were initially introduced to the term was in this more, it was in the posture of being accused or, you know, being told that they were something that they didn't even know they were, that was bad for, you know, it was like, it was probably more the emotion wrapped in their introduction to the term, which is, like I said, we've talked about this in the past, but about, there's something about being a helpful victim, you know, like even in the midst of of hardship and being done in a way that's improper, you know, still having the responsibility to act toward the betterment of the eventual outcome. But that's big. Let's switch gears to allyship.
Yes,
I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, because it's a whole like this whole idea is so I never heard it before.
Right. Yeah, I think April was probably the first leader I've heard talk about it in a real way and especially implement it into, you know, an entire business. So,
yeah, so what
I think,
is it?
Yeah, April, so if you could help us understand, as like especially linked to what you do with Azer & Co., you know, in searching for men as allies, how do any of those principles help us in this race discussion?
Yeah, I mean, I think an ally is somebody who knows what privilege and power they carry, and they want to use it on behalf of those who don't also carry it. So for Azer & Co., women have not had the same amount of opportunity and privilege and power and sharing of resources that men have had. And so the hope is, like I say all the time, the response to patriarchy is not matriarchy, it's partnership. Like what it looks like is for men to use their privilege and the resources and opportunities they've had to create the same for women. And I have experienced that my whole life. And it has been such a gift to be, because I can't do that stuff on my own. Particularly for white men to do that for me is incredibly significant and incredibly important to bring equity into that relationship. And the same is true for white people to do that, to use their privilege and power for the sake of their brothers and sisters of color. And it looks very intentional. There is loss there. There is an intentionality. Did I just say that? there's a thoughtfulness of what is it that I can do to lay my life down. And Philippians 2 talks about that's the way that Jesus lived, was whatever I have to do so for the sake of the other. And so I think particularly like at the top of this pyramid is white men, particularly white men that are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, that have experienced all of the privilege. Doesn't mean they haven't experienced hardship. doesn't mean they've experienced challenges, doesn't mean that they haven't struggled, but everything has lined up for them to have the top pick at everything. And so that allyship is really significant. And so like as a white woman, I have a ton of privilege because I'm white and I've experienced oppression and marginalization and ways that have left me out because of my gender. So the hope and the beauty is to be able to use the places of my power to share that and give that away to people of color. And because I know what it looks like to have experienced that.
Yeah, super good.
Yeah, that helps because because I've heard that phrase and it just, I've heard it. And when I watched it on other, I've seen it on other podcasts and other videos and kind of had it make a little bit more sense. But in some ways, I was thinking about this, like, again, I said like the idea of the macro and the micro, but I know for many people, especially where we are down here in San Diego, you know, there's a lot of white people that feel like they've been the ones been pushed down. And I'm using that as a point of like, oh, but I've never, you know, I've been the one pushed down, so to speak, but they don't see the idea of their, like the race as a whole or their gender as a whole. They're looking at their little area. So how do you encourage men? I want to use that before we talk about it on the race level. How do you encourage men to be an ally for women in leadership roles?
So there's so many things. In a church context, I dream of the day that half of the Sunday mornings are taught by women.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of churches will be like, man, we're scoring if it's like 4, 5, or 6 on a Sunday morning, like per year, you know? But man, I dream of like that equality, that equity there. I think that looks like what Nick did for his wife, that there was a period of time where she was looking to grow and to explore a new skill. And so he created the space and made the sacrifice for her to be able to go to school and to get training. And he carried more of the home stuff. He helped to cover those gaps so that she could contribute and experience that. That is allyship. That is looking at what does it look like for me to use my time, my talents, my resources, my connections in order to create that opportunity for women as well. I think that looks like one of the guys that is on our board, a man named Steve Carter, has done an incredible job of when somebody asks him to speak, he will, especially if he can't do it or if it's not the right fit for him, he is very proactive and intentional about giving names of women, not just a list of his buddies, and saying, I think you should contact and hire one of them instead. He'll also look at a roster for a conference. And if that speaking schedule does not have women that are on it, he'll speak into the fact that that does not share more of the kingdom and of the gospel by having just a bunch of guys be the communicators. So there are a million ways and creative things that men can do to help women have more opportunity and more place.
So what does that then, let's extend that now. What does that look like in a black-white relationship?
Yeah, it does boil down to relationship to me. I just heard a statistic recently that over 80% of Americans, white Americans, don't have a personal friendship with a person of color. 80%. That's a lot. You know, we live in Southern California, right? So there's a lot of ethnic and racial diversity in Southern California. And yet, I have still been shocked and amazed at how many white folks that I know that live in Southern California that really don't have close, personal friendships. Like they're the ones that you call when your kid is sick in the middle of the night. They're the ones that you call when you've got a challenge or a struggle and you want some advice or you want somebody to lend you an ear, that those relationships are mutual and reciprocal. It starts with relationship. And again, that's what Jesus showed us in the Gospels and in the way that he came to be with us, that incarnation, moving into the neighborhood is what Jesus showed us. This is what relationship looks like. And I think that relationship changes everything. And so when you can start building relationships, then you can go, hey, Nick, I feel like that was a little racist what I just said. Can you speak into that? Or I feel like I might have some blinders on this copy that I wrote for something that we're publishing. Can you speak into that? Or can you tell me if I've got something that I just can't see? And then that relationship becomes something where he's speaking into the work that I'm doing. And I'm asking for that kind of input. So again, I feel like there's so much there, and I don't know. That's super good.
That's really no. It's really helpful.
It's really good.
I have another question. Can I ask? This is a harder one. You ready?
1,000%.
You're ready. I know you got this. Okay, because I want to kind of talk into your own. You've got a very, you know, your husband's Puerto Rican. You said.
Yep.
You got three kids.
Three kids.
Two from Ethiopia.
Yeah, and one biological. So he's a Hausa.
Okay, yeah. So two from, oh, I love Ethiopia, by the way. I love it very much. Okay. How do you, like, you know, we've seen a lot of, I don't even know what the question is, but I just want to say it because it's fun, right? Okay. So we've got a lot of these Karens out there. I'm just going to go ahead and say that, who are like, I have a black friend. Mm. I have a black husband. I have black babies. They use that as this, like, kind of, like,
I'm excluded.
I'm not that because I've married this. How would you speak to that? Like what is it that's happening on that level when it's like, how could you say that I'm a racist? I have a black friend, you know what I mean? That kind of a thing, or I'm married to somebody who's a person of color. What does that look like?
Yeah. For me, it has required a lot of unlearning and relearning historically, theologically, that doesn't just have white voices of influence. And so for me, yeah, I have a brown husband who has also been on his own identity journey for the last 10 to 15 years of what it has looked like for him to grow up as a brown man in the US. Mm. And there's a lot of pressure for people of color to simply assimilate into the majority culture, which means a loss of identity of their color, of their heritage, of their culture. Mm-hmm. And so the reclaiming of that is the work of a lot of people. So just because you have one friend also doesn't mean that that friend is embracing and aware of the cultural and racial identity that they also carry in their body. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Of course, because like I think that's a part of this problem is like, well, my friend Nick said this, and it's like as if he now represents every black person that's ever existed.
Which is such a weight. Like I have a friend who, a mentor who has said, like that you have the freight of feeling iconic then. So when I'm the only woman in a room full of male leaders, I feel the freight of being iconic that I now, if I misstep as a woman, that I'm going to represent all women. And the same is true if you've got one friend of color. And there are a lot of people of color who have felt this pressure to assimilate and therefore have abandoned and lost their culture and their history and have, it's a loss. It's a grief and a harm for them as well. So even like raising black babies, like we could be raising our children to have black skin, but to be living in a white world, quite honestly, you know? Mm. And so there takes a lot of thought and intentionality of what does it look like for us to raise our kids so that they know that they are black, that they are from a place that has a very different culture, and to honor that culture, to celebrate that culture, to talk about that culture, and also for them to not feel like they have to be like their mom, who is quite white. So those are a couple of things that I think are just really significant. It's, you can't have one, because that one does not represent it all, and that one cannot carry all of that. So you've got to do your work. And there's so many resources out there now. There's so many places where you can grow and learn and listen to a different perspective. And so, I mean, if I could just say one more thing.
Please.
What I would hope most for Jesus people is that we would be the first people in line to say, I don't know, and I need help. Mm. It's humility.
Yeah.
That is acknowledging the fact that you're not God. Mm-hmm. And there might be some things in this conversation that you need to understand and that can lead you toward wholeness. And so what if instead of putting up all of those defenses and listing out your excuses and going into attack mode, what if instead we have this posture of humility, which is very much a learning, listening, receptive posture. And that does not make us weak. That makes us more like Jesus.
I love that. Wow. That was super good. That was really good. I was thinking too, and we should wrap up here in a minute, but I was thinking like when you're talking about your kids, you know, and Nick knows this, but for us, like we've only lived in America now for the last 2 years from living in Eastern Europe. So my kids never lived in America. And they're looked at as, you know, my son is as white as white as white as white. And yet he just, he doesn't really, my kids don't identify as like American, you know, they just don't identify that way. And yet, you know, everybody wants to force you to identify, but that's who you are. This is what you are. And it's like, they have to work really hard to claim like, no, but this is who I am. Mm. And I think we have to like be, I think that's the great season that we're in right now, is that we're, and this is a part of privilege, if we're honest, that we're letting people kind of put their foot down and say, hold on, I'm reclaiming an identity. I'm discovering an identity. You and I have talked about this a lot. Yeah. That I'll call you and be like, dude, I didn't know about this. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, I didn't know about this.
I didn't either.
So there's this identity kind of being reclaimed all around. And I feel like a part of privilege is that, what do I lose? As you're discovering, I'm saying you, but as many people are discovering, man, I'm learning this about myself or my history or my culture. What do I lose as a, I'm that 40-something-year-old white dude. What do I lose in that journey? Nothing. I don't lose anything. If anything, I might gain. I'm going to gain so much more. I'm going to gain in the relationships. And I'm going to gain in understanding more about who God is.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, you're going to gain in your own healing and wholeness.
Yeah.
Because really, I mean, white privilege, white supremacy, patriarchy, all of that has damaged men as well. It's not just for that's their good. Benefit. It's actually damaging and been harming to the Imago Dei. And so what if this is an invitation to lament and grieve that which never should have been, and an invitation into our healing and into our wholeness, not just for you, but for everyone.
Such a good point.
Yeah, that's a really
and
good point.
You know, what strikes me too is about like so much of what you've been saying, because I was going to ask earlier, what does it look like to go from, even in the ally conversation, from this person that has access to certain things other people don't, to then having this more, like this awareness, this inclusiveness of the people around you. There's been so much focus on the other person, you know, in this conversation. It seems like with everything that's swirling, we're in society thinking so much, probably because of the political stuff, we're thinking so much about how stuff makes us feel, that we are, when we're putting that wall up, not only are we stuck in our own negative feelings, we also can't even engage in the other person's story enough to care.
We're
we can't
so
even
harmed.
Start caring,
yeah,
you know? Yeah. So I guess I hear so much emphasis on being able to have that healthy distance in what we encounter, and that perspective of the other person being my priority to love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sustained by the love that I get from God, so that I can look at your pain.
Exactly.
Without needing it to, man, it's just super good, Coach. Wow. You did it.
Yeah, that was great.
You did it.
Oh my goodness. I'm so thankful that you would join us today and talk about these things. We're going to definitely put up all your info on our, this will go up on the screen. We'll put up the info.
Yeah, please tell us about your social media, websites, whatever you want people to find you on.
Azerandco.com, EZERandCo.com. You can find all of our stuff on there. And then my personal stuff is at April L. Diaz on Twitter and on Instagram. Would love to be connected to people. And if these conversations about wholeness and partnership are significant, important, feel like a need, that's what we're all about.
That's great. That's awesome. Thanks so much for doing this, April. And Nick, always, this is a blast.
Appreciate it, brother.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you. If you haven't already subscribed, please do. You can follow us as well. We'll put up all of our social media info. Nick's will be going up there. He's all over social media. It's unbelievable. He's not on social media. So
he's really not.
He's not on it.
Bad.
Yeah, he ghosts everybody on social media. There's nothing. But we are as a podcast, Crossing Cultures, we're on there. And we're looking forward to having more engaged conversations to help us grow as Christians and to be just useful and a part of what God's doing here in the world today. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to Crossing Cultures. If you found value in the show, do us a favor and leave a review on iTunes, or simply share the episode with a friend. And make sure to hit subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. If you'd like to connect with us, you can follow us on Instagram at crossing.cultures or by emailing us at thecrossingculturespodcast@gmail.com.